The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, November 16th, 2020.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She knows everything you do, because the woman in your life is you.
And it's a wonderful, wonderful day here in Sonoma County. We had a little bit of technical difficulty with the station, but we're on the air now and really excited about it. Anyway, I have two special guests with me today. Joining me on the phone will be Gail Simons, a retired nurse and member of the Homeless Action here in Sonoma County. Gail's going to share some of her feelings around the pandemic and how she is coping, along with an overview of Homeless Action and what are some of the challenges our homeless population is having. And I'm really excited about my second guest. I'm having Amy Windsor on, who's the new publisher for the Sonoma County Gazette. We'll be talking about some of the challenges and the future for the paper, which was sold last year to Sonoma Media, with the promise that the paper would continue with its community perspective. Oh, I love that paper. And you know, I was writing the Santa Rosa snippets for the past 4 years, and I've stepped down, and a shout out to Leslie Graves. This December issue will be the first issue that she is actually writing the column, and I'm really excited about that. Well, I want to wish my beautiful, beautiful granddaughter, Caitlin Beverly Jensen, a happy birthday, which happened on Saturday, November 14th. Katie is down in San Diego, and I miss not having those wonderful parties with her. Change is always upon us, and time is always flying by. That seems to be the quote from my life. And happy birthday, Caitlin. What a blessing to have you in our life. And what I did was I looked up to see what happened on your birthday, because I try to do every week, our history is our strength. Well, on November 14th, 1903, the United States Women's Trade Union League was established. Oh my goodness, 1903. I'm sure our dear friend Lisa Maldonado will love to hear that. So November 14th, 1903, the U.S. Women's Trade Union League is established. All of a sudden, women start having some rights. That was 17 years after that is when women got the vote. Then on November 14th, 1946, Emily Green Balch, B-A-L-C-H, she was the co-founder of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, and she was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. Oh, so many powerful women in history. And then a special happy, happy, happy birthday. This was something that was so interesting to me to find out that the woman who, her name is Rose Knox, K-N-O-X. Her and her husband co-founded Knox Gelatin Company. And she was born on November 18th, 1857. And she made her transition in 1950. And what was so interesting about Rose, not only that my grandmother's name was Rose and Ken's grandmother's name was Rose, but she was one of America's foremost businesswomen. She was the co-founder of Knox Gelatin Company, and she revolutionized the company following her husband's death, initiating a five-day work week and two-week vacation. Can you believe it? Of course, women always on the front line. You know, an interesting thing happened to me. It's kind of a family thing. We had a special gathering for Halloween, and it was really interesting. You know, people were wearing masks, but it was not the way it needs to be, where we're all wearing masks, we're all doing social distancing. And there was a lot of controversy around the mask, whether you could wear it inside, outside, around side, you know, and all of a sudden there was this big discussion. And of course, you know, Ken and I, we become the fanatics because we do the radio show and we listen to the news constantly. So we know every little thing that's going on, especially when I was writing for the Santa Rosa snippets. I kept really on top of all the reports from Sonoma County. I believe we have to this point 142 deaths. I mean, this is a real serious issue. And so I was trying to figure out a way how to present it. Last show, I talked about Governor Chris Christie, what his experience was. But what happened was, does, and I'm not going to mention this woman's name. I do have an email out to her to see if I can get her to maybe be on the show next week to talk about this. But this woman wrote a very, very interesting, long statement about what happened to her and her husband around the coronavirus. And as I read it, I said, this is perfect. And so I can't read the whole letter. It's very long, but I'm going to read little excerpts for it just to give you the idea of the impact of that this happened. And the innocence of people, even though they know they should do certain things, you know, you get involved in a crowd and before you know it, you know, you're doing all kinds of things that you should not be doing, particularly around the mask. So part of the letter says, she says, we went to a party with some friends 3 weeks ago Saturday, and we hugged a girlfriend neck and a lifelong friend's neck who turned 50. We've been planning the party for months. One of the girls that came over from Jacksonville, Florida, wasn't feeling well. She came over to see Randy and Jess and hugged them, and I'm sure. We went back to her hotel and left the next morning. Me, that's her, she's saying, her husband and their oldest son went to see them before they went home the next day. We spent less than an hour there and went home. There were about 10 people there playing games. So they fast forward, you know, they come home, a few days pass, and they start getting ill. And all of a sudden, her husband, who is asthmatic, all of a sudden cannot breathe, and they have to send him to the hospital. Well, actually, before that, they were bedridden for 3 days, and we finally called the doctor to tell her what was going on, and her husband was breathing, and I knew something wasn't right. He went in for an x-ray, and by that evening, they were taking him to the hospital. For the next 3 days in the hospital, he received different kinds of medications, and then they send him home. Okay, so they thought, okay, we're going home, and now it's going to be okay, it's going to pass. Well, it didn't. Before you know it, turned around, like I said, her husband was asthmatic. The next thing you know, he's in the hospital in intensive care with a ventilator, and they don't know which way it's going to go. You know, and by this time, you know, they're in a state of shock. Well, she goes on to explain, COVID is not like any other virus our doctors have ever seen. It attacks one person and they can fight it, but the next, it grabs a hold of their lungs and squeezes every bit of oxygen they have out, and you feel like you're suffocating. Imagine how that feels. You're getting 100% oxygen, but it still feels like someone is standing on the tube. What a frightening feeling. You know, and all this happened is innocently. You know, innocently, friends, gathering, excitement, planning for a party, like Thanksgiving. Oh. Then she says, oh, I didn't mention that the fact that COVID has shut all the hospitals down, so only patients are allowed in the rooms. So we and the kids can't even see her husband. So that's another thing that has happened. So the reason I'm bringing this up, because through this letter, I can see the seriousness of it. And then she ends the letter that, you know, he finally does come home and he's on the mend right now, but it's still very iffy. But she says this about him in the hospital. I can't hold his hands and tell him I'm here supporting him. I have to sit at home waiting on pins and needles for the next text or info from the doctor. I have to call my kids together every morning and give them the latest update and see the pain in their eyes. So why is this letter important? And I want to thank her. I hope I can get her on the air next week and really have a little bit more of a comprehensive story. Why am I doing this, you might ask? Why am I doing this? Because we are not hearing enough stories from people who are actually going through the process of getting the COVID virus and what they have to endure and what they have to go through. Not only the individual who is sick, but also the person, the people, the family. I mean, I was in the hospital for almost 4 months in 2010. I can't imagine what it would be like not to have anybody there visiting me. Oh, I got a note from Ken. Oh, and right, our dear, very dear friend, Keith, his nephew, of 36 years old just died of COVID. And that's another interesting story because they lived in more rural areas. And they felt in the rural areas they're not touched because there's not a lot of gathering. And here a young man, 36 years old, in perfect health, gets the virus and boom, it's over with.
Asthma.
Asthma again. And, you know, we have poor quality air from the fires of late. So we really don't know how much damage has been done to our lungs. You know, some of us don't have symptoms, but it's amazing. Again, why am I doing this? Thanksgiving is coming up. Christmas is coming up. New Year's is coming up. Valentine's Day is coming up. All those times that we normally come together with family, friends, and have parties and celebrate, hug each other, make the world safe and wonderful. Well, we can't do that, folks. When we show up, we all have to be wearing masks. We all have to do social distancing, and we all have to wash our hands continually. And that only gives you 90% protection. Actually, 94%, they said. Okay? And limit your amount of people that are in the room. You know, they even have every city, every state, every county has guidelines. You know, in my opinion, I think it should only be households should not be mingling with one another. You know, it's not going to be forever. It's not going to be forever, and it's not a political thing. And the thing that is most, 16 people, they're saying no more than 16 people.
At our party, we had 16 people, and there were 9 households.
Oh, right. At the party we were at, we had 16 people and 9 households. So all these people they're mingling everywhere. You know, it's not going to be forever, folks. And remember, when you take care of yourself, you're taking care of me and your family. It's very, very important to understand that. You know, and also all of a sudden, you know, here we had an election and all this hullabaloo that's going on, and still... And still, the man sitting in the presidency is not putting on stronger mandates to protect all of us. I mean, this is no joke. Who would think in our lifetime that we would have to experience it? But guess what? We are experiencing it, and we have to take it very seriously. Particularly, you know, for the children in the future. I mean, here's this poor man, you know, he has children. His wife is worried to death. She can't visit him. She has to wait for the doctors to either text her or do some things. You know, it's a strange disease, and we have to be more serious. You know, and one last thing I want to say, you know, we don't think that it's going to hit young children. Well, we know someone 16 years old. Just turned 17, actually, who actually had gotten the virus and now is experiencing certain neurological difficulties. So, you know, it's a disease that we don't know how it affects us. We don't know who it affects. Therefore, we have to be twice as diligent and twice as careful. You know, and I say to any person, particularly parents, for not to wear a mask and not to protect yourself is you're not protecting your children and you're not protecting the future. Well, that's a lot to think about, you know, and I don't mean to get on my soapbox, but I'll tell you folks, this is a serious issue and it's beyond paranoia. It's called concern. It's called listening to science and it's called understanding what is happening. Well, I have one last thing to say, one last commentary that is really kind of getting to me. You know, this whole election, this whole thing, oftentimes a lot of it is one issues, particularly around the area of abortion and gun control. You know, when you start thinking about abortion, you know, it's really not about abortion. I mean, I'm not for abortion. I'm not against abortion. I'm for choice. I'm for a woman to have the right to make a choice over her own body and for people to make a choice whether they can raise this child in an efficient and effective, loving way, whether they have the resources or whatever is happening in their lives. I mean, people have abortions for many, many different reasons. And you know something, if we just had a good sex education programs and made birth control available to all women. I mean, and there's also a saying, why do women always have to be responsible? What about men? Why not let them have a vasectomy until they're ready to become fathers? Because it can be reversed. I mean, we have a family member. That's what they did. The man took care of himself. And then when they were ready to have children, it was reversed. But, you know, I found a very, very interesting saying from a woman by the name of Sister Joan Chittister. She's an American Benedictine nun. She's a theologian, an author, and a speaker. She has served as the Benedictine Prioress and Benedictine Federation President. She's the president of the Leadership Conference of Women in Religion and co-chair of the Global Peace Initiative of Women. Now, that's a mouthful, and that's a woman that's really involved and deserves our respect. And this is what she says about this whole thing around pro-life. I do not believe that just because you're opposed to abortion, that makes you pro-life. Your morality is deeply lacking if all you want is a child born, but not a child fed, not a child educated, not a child housed. And why would you think that you don't? Because you don't want any tax money to go there? That's not pro-life. That's pro-birth. We need a much broader conversation on what the morality of pro-life is. And that's a statement by Sister Joan Chittister. And you know something? We have to start looking at that. We really do. I often had a fantasy is we should make all, you know, okay, abortion's illegal because you're killing the beginning of life. Well, let's make wars illegal. Let's make hunger illegal. All these other things that kill people, that murder people, because they can be prevented. When I say murder and kill, it's because you can give someone housing. Allergies. Well, that's a lot to think about, but you know, that's what Women's Spaces is all about. It's about thinking about things and taking those thoughts a little bit into action. And I'm going to take a drink of water here. Boy, water, the source of all life, you know. God, keep our water safe, for heaven's sakes. Anyway, that's a lot to think about, but that's what Women's Spaces is all about. And, you know, I want to do a shout-out right now to my partner, Ken Norton, who sits with me every Monday morning and runs the board and does the engineering. This morning we had a little bit of different technicalities here because the station is having some challenges, and Ken just stepped right in and took care of it. And I just want to acknowledge him and thank him from the bottom of my heart. He is my co-producer, and I just want folks to know, and it's a wonderful feeling to have a good partner that sits next to you and encourages you and prompts you and writes you little notes here and there. So thank you, Ken. Thank you for being there with me.
You're welcome.
Well, we're going to take a musical break, and when we return, we're going to be talking with Gail Simons, you know, and the song I'm going to be playing is a Patti Smith song, you know, Power of the People. I mean, I just think, let me just see that title. It's called People Have the Power. And they do have the power. And when we return, I will be talking with Gail Simons, a retired nurse who is highly active in our community. We'll be talking about what it's like to be living in a pandemic and give us an overview of what's happening with homeless action and what they're doing for the homeless. And, you know, I thought we'd just have a conversation together, just to talk, two women talking about some of the issues and some of the challenges that we're facing. And I met Gail Simons when we were all working on the Andy Lopez Coalition. And grassroots, let me tell you something, folks. I have to do another shout-out, a shout-out for everybody. They got almost all the final results for the election, and although there's still a little iffy in some of the city council races, they're still counting the votes. But so far, it looks like Measure P had 66%. So thank the people of Sonoma County. So let's just go ahead and play that song, Ken, and let's get Gail Simons on the phone. Looks like our music is not going to pay. We're having a little bit of a difficulty here. So go ahead, Ken, give Gail a call, and then we'll start the interview with her. And the second interview I'm really excited about, because I want to do a shout-out to Vesta Copesakes, who was the originator of the Sonoma County Gazette. You know, she sold it to Sonoma Media with the promise that they would keep it as a community newspaper. And I want to do a shout-out. If she's listening, I hope you're enjoying your retirement, Vesta, because you did a great job. Well, listen, we have Gail Simon on the phone. We're not going to have any music on this show. It looks like like I said at the beginning of the program, we've had some musical technical difficulties. And so without further ado, I want to introduce my guest, Gail Simons. Gail, welcome to Women's Spaces.
Well, thank you, Elaine. I think you're doing a very smooth job, even if you're having technical difficulties.
Oh, well, thank you. We just keep going on with the show. That's all there is to it.
That's right.
Well, Gail, well, you know, the idea of having you on was just to have a short conversation with a woman who's struggling with the pandemic and struggling with all the rules and regulations, and also maybe a little conversation about homeless action. But before we start, you know, I know you're a retired nurse. I know you're an activist. Tell us a little bit about Gail Sommans. You know, here's your chance to give a little brag, Gail. Tell us a little bit about you.
Well, I'm 72 years old. I grew up in Sacramento. Television was new when I was young. And when I was a teenager, I stumbled across Dr. Kildare series, which I thought Dr. Kildare was the most handsome man in the world. And that's how I decided to become a nurse.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
Well, or that was the beginning of it, actually. And then I had a relative who was a OBGYN who said if I liked people, I should go into nursing. And so I'm so glad I did. I've had a very wonderful life, and nursing made it possible. I really wanted to be a mother more than anything in the world, and nursing was the trade that allowed me to do that, especially as a single mom. So I went to school at UCSF, got a bachelor's degree there, and my goal was public health nursing. But I looked around and decided I wanted to live in Sonoma County, and when I came here, the public health nurses were so happy. No one ever quit her job, and there was no opening. So I went into hospital nursing and ended up with 20 years in intensive care unit at Kaiser, and then retired 8 years ago or so, and have been just loving waking up every morning, knowing I didn't have an alarm clock waking me up. And I have loved using my volunteer energy in the area of public health by working with Homeless Action. So the circle came around. I didn't get to work in public health professionally, but I have loved working with Safe Parking Lot residents and working with the Homeless Action organization, which is a bunch of volunteers. It's not a nonprofit. And so there's my life story.
Well, it's a wonderful, you know, I love when I was talking on the phone when you said that, oh, I love retirement. I don't have to listen to any alarm clocks. I have the same feeling. Yes. Well, you know, Gail and I met during the time of the Andy Lopez situation, and now here we are, you know, Measure P passed. I mean, that is really quite a success. But let's talk just a little bit. You know, before, I don't know if you listened to the first part of the show, but I was reading a letter from a woman whose husband ended up in the hospital with COVID. And what I thought the conversation we would have is, number one is, you know, you are a nurse, so you understand disease, you understand all the different implications that happens. What are some of your thoughts about the pandemic, and what are some of the things that you think it's important for people to do? I mean, particularly around the mask and the social distancing and washing hands.
Well, I'm very relieved that maybe the national conversation is going to turn around to wearing masks. And I hope that the leaders will model that they'll come out on stage and talk with their mask on for a few minutes and then tell people why they're taking their mask off so that we can see their faces and hear their message better. But as a nurse, I see that this is really a very dark shadow over all of us. It's getting worse. I finally have an acquaintance or a friend who came down with the illness. I myself am extremely concerned as a 72-year-old with asthma, so I'm keeping myself in the house as much as possible, and we can talk about that in a little bit. I don't feel depressed about that. I feel fortunate to have a house to stay in. So I think we're going to have to wear masks, just like they say, wash our hands, don't touch our faces. We should put that in there. Don't touch our faces until we've washed or gelled our hands. And about the masks, as a person who feels very vulnerable, I like to wear an N95 mask, which I have left over from our fires. to protect me, because that N95 mask has a better seal than the cloth masks. And then on top of that, when I go to the grocery store, I put the regular mask, and I find I breathe quite easily. So the N95 mask protects me when I'm in a store, grocery store. But the regular mask of any type, a surgical mask or a cloth mask, protects the public from me in case I should be carrying something. So I double up since I feel vulnerable. But when I walk out my door, I put my cloth mask on while I'm walking around the block. And it's a message to everyone that I care about them. So most people, when I'm walking around the block and they're pushing a stroller or they're doing their morning walk, are not wearing a mask because they feel like they can separate and they're outdoors. That's all true, but I wear mine as a way of saying, we need to do this as a society in order to get well. So I'm wearing it as a badge. This is what we need to do.
Oh, you're such, you know something, I could not have put that any better than you put it, and I want to thank you, Gail. That's perfect. And, you know, we feel the same way. You know, I'm 80, and Ken's in his 70s, so, you know, we're the vulnerable population, too. And like, yes. Like I've said on the program, I've been in the hospital. I've had that ventilator down my throat. It is not the best. It's not the most exciting thing in town to have happen to you.
Well, listen,
as we move on, and I really thank you for that message. I really do. And also one another thing that you said, and that's what inspired me to have you on, is the fact that instead of us saying, oh no, we got this pandemic, it's awful, blah, 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 just start saying, okay, this is what's happening right now. This is what we have to do, and how much appreciation. We're still in a free country. We still, many of us have homes. Unfortunately, there are many homeless, but the majority of people still are in their homes. And, you know, there's a lot to be grateful for. And
I think because we live in North America, and haven't had bombs dropped on us in any war other than the Trade Center, of course, but we can't imagine how it must feel to be running from bombs and to have our homes and our towns destroyed and to be, you know, with children in our arms going to a refugee camp where we have cold tents. So every morning, I don't think about that. Very briefly, I think my higher power that's not happening to me. And I think, wow, look at the sunshine. Look, I have a roof over my head. I can go to a grocery store, for goodness sakes. You know, I am alive and so far I am well. So I try to be grateful and have a sense of gratitude for those things. I don't want to dwell on the fact that other people in the world are having a very tough time, but I am very aware that, you know, children were separated from their parents and are still in ICE detentions. I can't imagine the trauma of that. And you know, the people that are escaping from torture and from killings all over the world. Eritrea is going through it again in one corner of their country, and Ethiopia. It just always going to be happening. But right now, I can wear a mask. You know, right now, I cannot go somewhere for Thanksgiving. I can stay home for a year. No big deal. I'm grateful to be able to do that.
Well, I think that's a very important message, and it helps us. It helps us. So let's switch, because we're coming to the end of the segment very, very quickly, and I really want to thank you for these words of wisdom. Can you give us, I know, you know, one of the things that, you know, you got to be careful when you're talking to a radio host. You know, they pick up everything on the phone. One of the things you said that you've been observing or become part of a meeting that Homeless Action is having. And so can you give me just a quick overview? We only got about 2 minutes here. A quick overview of what Homeless Action is doing at this point and how people on the streets are coping with the pandemic.
Yes, Homeless Action is mostly a clearinghouse for information these days, and inviting other organizations to come and exchange information with us. Most organizations in town wish that we had more housing available, wish that we had supportive housing available, wish that we had land for tiny houses to be built. And the public forums, the city council and the board of supervisors just haven't been able to give those public lands to help out our situation. So we continue to try to push in that direction. There is some COVID with the homeless population, though I don't think it's a great deal. But we're very concerned that the forces that be continue to sweep the encampments where people are finding some safety from COVID, and moving people away from their own communities, not providing porta-potties or trash containers, complaining that people are soiling the earth but not providing services. So we're just continually pushing in those directions.
What do you think?
We probably have 3,000 people that are unhoused in our community. At least 2,000 of them are sleeping outdoors at night.
What do you think is the resistance? I mean, why is it so? I mean, it's to me, we took a walk the other night, and we noticed one of our neighbors had about four different mobile homes on there, not mobile homes, trailers on their property. And it, or even it looked like campers also. There was a camper, a trailer, I think two campers and two trailers. And I thought to myself, why don't people just open up their land? And maybe there should be some provisions for porta potties if they do that, you know, to bring some hygiene on their property. But maybe that's another way. I mean, there seems to me that we have so much open space in this community that it seems to me that I don't understand why it's such a difficult situation. I mean, what's the holdback? What do you think?
Well, I think, for one thing, there are lots of rules in the community about putting a porta potty on your place. But like a homeowners association would have rules against that and so on. But I think it's basically fear. I think people do not know each other. Most people don't know a homeless person personally, and they don't realize that homeless people are just people that have some problems, but they're people, you know, with an intricate story just like all of us. So I think it's fear-based. People are afraid that their property values are going to go down. They're afraid that their children are going to be attacked by some monster that they consider a homeless person to be. And so, you know, it's sort of like what's happening in the world in general. There's a lot of fear going around and less community spirit, less caring for our next-door neighbor or our brother as ourselves, you know.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, because we had a friend of ours that actually lived in front of our house for almost 12 years and became part of the neighborhood. And nobody, there was no, you know, we let him in to do showers and stuff, so there was never any issue. The neighbors got along with him. He actually became a watchdog for the neighborhood. So it's very, very interesting. Boy, these allergies are really getting me. It's very, very interesting when you start looking about it. And I think you're right. I think people need to know each other and find ways to reach out and find out ways to speak out, so the county and the city will start even doing more than they've been doing. And I know everybody's trying. Everybody's trying, but it's a difficult situation.
It is. Now and then there are some wonderful letters editor that come up with really good, solid suggestions. So I always read those, and I'm grateful for the people that put kind and thoughtful plans or ideas into those letters to the editor. And one person at a time, that's right. I have a fellow living on my driveway, and at first I had some real resistance from some neighbors, and now the neighbors that all around me are very familiar with him, know him by name,
exactly.
And are grateful that he's watching out for their houses, you know.
That's exactly what happened in our situation. In fact, when he left to move to San Francisco, which was very interesting, the neighbors actually, where is he? You know, where's Bill? You know, I mean, it was like all of a sudden an amazing thing. I mean, that, and loving your neighbor as yourself, because there's an, I believe in this saying, there but poor fortune will you or I. That's why we have to protect and love one another, because we never know when it could happen to us. And if it could happen, like one child pulled from their parent, it could happen to any child, you know.
That's
so,
right. That's right. And we can all do small things. I'm right now knitting some very simple fingerless gloves to give out, so I don't have to go out onto the street and meet somebody or talk to somebody during this COVID time, but I can make these little gloves because it's cold out there, you know. give them to the local church over the United Methodist near the Memorial Hospital. They have a weekly dinner every Tuesday night, and they give out clothing, warm clothing, and I can take my gloves there, and they will give them out.
Well, why don't you send me an email with that information, and I'll be happy to put it on our website.
I'll do that.
Any last words, Gail Simons?
No. Everybody, wake up every morning and think grateful thoughts for what we have, and hold on to your hats, because this too shall pass.
Oh, thank you so much. And Gail, thank you so much for being on and engaging in this conversation with me. I truly enjoyed it. And blessings to you,
honored,
my friend.
I am honored, Elaine. Thank you.
You take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Wow. We live in a good community. And now we're going to take a musical break. And I'm going to be playing the song Headlines.
There's no music.
Oh, I forgot. Oh, my God. I have such a short memory. Well, what's happening now is Ken is getting Amy Windsor on the line. Amy is the new publisher for the Sonoma County Gazette, and I'm really excited. I'm really excited to be interviewing her. And she had her first issue, which was very, very exciting. And I wrote the last column. And in some levels, it makes me feel sad, but at the same time, I'm like Gail. You know, I'm retired. I have no deadlines except for the show that's happening. Well, it sounds like Ken does have Amy on the phone, so I'm going to tell you a little bit about Amy. Are we on?
Yep.
Amy, welcome to Women's Spaces.
Hey, thanks, Elaine. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm telling you, we've been having a very exciting moment here in the studio, and I'm really glad to have you on and so happy to be talking about the Sonoma County Gazette. So before we begin, Amy, do you mind if I tell my listeners just a little bit about you?
Not at all. That's totally fine.
Well, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to read exactly what you wrote me, because I just think this is a beautiful description of yourself. And then I'd like you to just add a few points, you know, any other points that you would like to include. Amy Windsor is the new publisher of the Sonoma County Gazette. She is a mother of two girls. And I have to say, the cutest little girls you ever saw in your life. She has 7 chickens and 1 cat, so she's very busy. She is happily married, lives in Sebastopol, and loves to bake pies. And at the end of the conversation, I'm going to have her give us a hint about these pies that she likes to bake. She has been in Sonoma County for a handful of years and feels grateful to be putting down roots here. She originates from Eastern Washington, which is why she'll call you from a 509 area code phone number. But with her hippie politics, fairy children, and support for small businesses, she's about as West County as they come. I just love that, the way you described yourself. So let me know a little bit. What is your background? Just talk a little bit about your education and how, you know, what was your journey to get into journalism? And I know you took a break and now you've come back. So give us your little life story.
Yeah, thanks, Elaine. Like I mentioned in my little bio, I grew up in Eastern Washington. I was born in Butte, Montana. Went to Eastern, my family and I, we moved to Eastern Washington. Don't worry, I won't give you the long version, just the cliff notes. And then grew up there and moved to Portland, Oregon, where I met my husband and went to school, studied journalism and English, and I was just kind of a book nerd, writer person. Always had a notebook and a pen with me, and just loved journalism. I was a really bad English student in high school, and didn't do any of the really smart classes, and turned to journalism instead in high school. And that's where I fell in love with the newspaper, and couldn't find anything cooler in the world than newspapers. And from there on out, I really wanted to tell the news and tell stories and seek out the truth. And those are kind of the three integral things that I think a newspaper does. And That's one of the things that I went to school for. I went to the University of Portland in Portland, Oregon. I was able to go there on a running scholarship. Running and writing were my life when I was a high school kid and when I was in college. And then after I graduated in the recession in 2008-2009, all hopes and dreams of getting like a real live adult job went down the drain, and I got a part-time retail job at Pottery Barn, but I was able to have a stringer job with Pamplin Media Company, which is this kind of local small-town media company up in Portland, and they have community newspapers, and that was my first taste of community journalism, and I just loved it, and I got to do kind of everything for that media group.
I want to butt in here for a little bit.
Please do, yeah.
And go back with your story, the importance of when you said you did poorly in English and then you went in to go to journalism. The same thing happened to me. When I went back to school at 30, I had a teacher by the name of Mr. Linville, and he called me over. He says, you know, Elaine, you're a great writer, but you don't know anything about the English language or punctuation. He says, become a journalism major. And
yeah.
I became a journalist the same reason, and I ended up winning a journalism award. I mean, here was someone who could barely write, and the same experience. So you see the importance of education. You see the importance of teachers and opportunity. So I'm glad.
Definitely.
I'm glad you brought that up, because look at the success that you're having right now.
Well, thank you. And yeah, I've always loved to read and write. There was just, for some reason, and when I got to high school, I just didn't want to take the AP classes and do that rigorous course study, and wanted to do, you know, it was nice to know that there were other things that you could do with reading and writing, and that journalism is one of those things you can do with it. And so that was the course that I took with it, while all of my friends were, you know, noses in their literature books in high school. I was kind of more, I was actually more science driven and math driven in high school, but didn't go that route. Anyway,
well, you know, it's interesting too. It's interesting when you talk about your career, because you and I first met when we were trying to get together and have the, oh my God, I can't believe we had the 100th anniversary of women getting the vote, plus a pandemic all in 1 year, plus an election. I mean, this has been a year beyond years.
2020 kind of wants to hog everything. It wants it all. So all the good and the bad, I think.
So that's when I first met you. You were working with Linda Hopkins. And I was very impressed. The most impressive thing about it was when I'll never forget when your little girls came to the meeting, and they were just so darn, but so involved with each other, and it wasn't like they were not even there. They were just beautiful little children that were just part of the whole scene. And I never forgot that. That was a beautiful experience for me, particularly as a grandmother. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Gazette, and you know, here you are. You know, it's been a year ago. I remember when the rumors start going around that Vesta was selling the newspaper, and then all of a sudden, I remember I called her. I says, Vesta, I don't like gossip. Is this true? And that's when she first told me that she had it listed. And then Sonoma Media came along, and then the contract was that she would work a year, and then a new publisher would come along. And here you are. So talk a little bit about the Gazette. Do you have a little bit of history of it? Anything that you'd like to share about it, and how you came about becoming the publisher?
Of course, and I don't think you were alone, Elaine, in feeling that kind of heart drop to your gut feeling. You know, when we found out that Vesta wanted to have a life of her own, for crying out loud. I mean, she's been a service of this community, and being the publisher of the Gazette for the past 19 years, I mean, where would we be, and where would West Sonoma County be, especially since it's been such a stronghold here in West County? But where would our small businesses be without the Gazette? You know, I feel really grateful to get to try to fill her shoes as the publisher, be the driver of this vehicle. I had worked for Supervisor Hopkins, which I did as her field representative for 2 years. And then after that, I actually worked for Social Advocates for Youth for a year. And I was in that position when I found out that Vesta had sold the paper to Sonoma Media Investments. And I remember sitting at my desk and looking at my computer and at the news article about it and just kind of going, oh my goodness, you know, because I had that same gut reaction, because I think everybody, you know, especially people here in West County who love the Gazette and, you know, keep it in their purse, you know, for the full month because they know they're going to keep it and read it all month long, had the concerns about what that might mean for the future of the Gazette, because Sonoma Media Investments does own the Press Democrat, which is our wonderful daily paper, but has that grind to it, has that hard news, deadline-driven aspect to it, which has a time and place for it, has a time and place, but is different and has a different beat and feel than a community newspaper. And I think that people in our communities have been afraid that we might lose that feel of the Gazette. And I know I was afraid when I first, again, saw that Vesta had sold to SMI that, you know, what does that mean for the future of the Gazette? And in no point in reading that article was I like, I'm going to be the future publisher of the Gazette. And so I pinch myself every day, Elaine, that here I am sitting as the publisher of the Gazette, because it is a dream.
The thing is about dreams come true. If you allow yourself to persist and you keep your eyes and ears and heart open for opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, the Gazette, you know, I mean, I've written for it, and I want to thank you. I want to let my listeners know, if you go on to Santa Rosa Snippets, November 2020, you'll see a beautiful tribute that they made to me, and I really want to thank you for that, Amy. That was so humbling, you know, to be appreciated like that. And once I saw that, I says, yeah, this is somebody who understands how to say thank you and to acknowledge people, and that gave me a great feeling. I mean, maybe it sounds egotistical, but you know how we judge people by what they do to us. So I want to thank you for that. Well, now that the Gazette's in your hands, and you know, it was really a very community driven paper. I mean, everybody mm-hmm. in the community, and it's all volunteer. You know,
absolutely.
Most of it is volunteer. I know for myself. It was such an honor. I mean, the benefit that I got from writing the column was beyond anything that I ever imagined. So what, now that it's in your hands, you know, and all of a sudden you have the opportunity and you've done a little bit of evaluation and you had your first issue. What are some of the things that you, and congratulations. I mean, the first issue is the hardest. I mean, come on.
I hope it's the hardest. I mean,
oh, it is, my love. Trust me. The first issue, you know, it's like when you first go on a job, you know, and they put this something in front of you and you say, oh my God, how am I going to learn this? And then 6 months later, you're training someone else. You know what I mean?
It's like bite at a time, right?
Oh, yes.
Oh, that reminds me of a quote for a freelance piece I wrote for Vesta, and it was a quote that Roberta McIntyre said to a head of Fire Safe Sonoma, and she goes, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. Which is just like kind of a grotesque quote, but she was saying it in context to how do you make your house completely, you know, fire resilient and like ready, you know, ready for fire season, and it's, you know, one bite at a time, and that's just something that sticks with me, especially as I go into layout.
Well, it's very, you know, I was the editorial page manager for the Los Angeles City College paper, and I remember I just had one page, baby, and boy, I'll tell you something, get that one page out was enough. You put a whole paper out, so congratulations. But as we're coming to the end of our segment, we just have a few minutes here, I'd mm-hmm. like to know, what are some of the things that you want to bring to the Gazette? What are some of the ideas that maybe a little change or a little tweak here and there?
Yeah, I mean, my plan is to keep the Gazette what it is, that it's a forum for building the community. And I want to see and bring in aspects of the community that aren't represented right now. And I think that there are a lot of aspects and parts of the community that aren't represented. I think that there are young voices that aren't represented. I think that there are are, you know, activities and parts of our Sonoma County life that aren't represented. I was reaching out to some of my old colleagues who love cycling, and I was like, hey, it would be really cool to have a bike columnist in the Sonoma County Gazette, because everybody, I mean, to be honest, I think everybody in Sonoma County either loves cycling or hates cycling, and what better place to build a common ground for cycling than in the Sonoma County Gazette. And that's kind of what I want to use and invite people to use the pages of the Sonoma County Gazette for, is to build a common ground, because now more than ever, we need common ground in our culture. And it needs to start locally, because, I mean, look at just the election that we had. You know, we had 70 million people vote for somebody who I think a lot of us, especially here in Sonoma County, really, really disagree with and cannot understand or try to understand. And we have to try to find common ground with those 70 million people, right? And common ground needs to start at home. And when we can find common ground within ourselves and build that community, you know, we can go far. And that's what I want to do with the Sonoma County Gazette and invite people to, you know, to do.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I was writing something the other night and suddenly this phase came to me. We're all in this together. I mean, we all live in this planet called Earth, called Mother mm-hmm. Earth. You know, we're all part of it. We have to share in it. In order for us all of us to survive, we have to be together and working together. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, another thing that's really interesting, just to let my listeners know, I always have my guests send me 5 questions so I get an idea of what they think is important to talk about. And this one question really struck me, and I'd like you to address it. You said you wanted me to ask you, are you open to feedback or criticism if we do not like the change that are happening? And how can we, the readers, offer feedback? I thought that was a very, very open statement. So you want to address that a little bit, Amy? I mean, I think what you're doing is you're calling for people to critique you and let you know. Because, you know, it's easy to put, one of the things, it's easy to criticize people. It's easy to say, oh, it's not the same. But it's another thing to actually write somebody a letter or something. Say, you know, I really love your publication. However, I'd like you to do this. I mean, that's my thought. So why mm-hmm. don't you address that question, or why you thought that was important?
Yeah, I mean, so, and actually, right before I got on the phone with you, Elaine, I sent out my kind of last blast to advertisers and contributors saying, hey, you've got a few more days to send stuff. And I also added a note that said, you know, change is hard and transition can be funky and uncomfortable, but, you know, I'm here for you. And, I'm all open ears. I'm a pretty open person and, with a pretty tough skin. And, I like to, you know, I'm somebody who seeks to understand rather than, seeks to be understood. And I think that that's really important during these times of transition. And, when, you know, when you're going from somebody who has been your main point of contact or been the face of, you know, the main driver of the vehicle who has picked up your kids on the bus for the last 19 years. It's important to seek to understand. You know, I can't pretend to know everything because I don't. and I want to make sure that I'm open for, you know, and available for feedback, because we only get better and our community only gets better with collaboration and communication. And what fun is it if we don't have that?
Let's end on that note and give your website where people can get a hold of you, how they can communicate with you, and also very quickly, I mean quickly, what's this about loving to bake pies? Do you have a special secret or something?
I just love it, and I will share a trick and tip that I got from a winner of the Gravenstein Apple Fair baking pie, and it is to preheat your bake, like a pan that you put the pie on, like the unbaked pie on, and then you don't have a soggy bottom. And it's like, it solves all of your soggy bottom problems. And, I love baking pies. It's just savory pies, sweet pies. There's no bad time for pie.
No.
and it just, it is, relaxing and to make a good pie crust and to eat pie with coffee. There are so many better things in the world.
I've got to leave and get a cup of coffee with a piece of pie. let's give your website or your email, Amy.
Yeah, we are SonomaCountyGazette.com, and you can email me at amie@SonomaCountyGazette.com.
Well, Amy Windsor, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being on Women's Spaces. I want to wish you the greatest success in the world. I just know you're going to do a great job. And thank you, Elaine.
I'm giving you a big virtual hug from outside of my little house in Sebastopol. So thank you so much. And I can't wait to see you once, as we say in my house, the stupid bug is over. That's okay. The only time we use the word stupid. So,
thank you, my dear.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for our show, folks. I want to thank Amy Windsor for being on from the Sonoma County Gazette and from Citizen Gail Simon. You've been listening to Women's Spaces. This is Elaine B. Holtz. I look forward to being with you the next time.
Oh, the woman in your life, she can feel. She knows everything you do because the woman in your life is you. And who is sure to give you courage? And who will surely make you strong? Who will bear all the joy that is coming to you? She's patient and she's waiting, and she'll take you home now. The woman in your life, she can wait so easily. She knows everything you do because the woman in your life is you. Because the woman in your life, the woman in your life.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, November 16th, 2020.